This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for 31st of August. I am your host, Mohsen, and I am joined by the Rogue One, Gary Witter.
All right, mate, how are you?
I'm doing great, mate. How are you doing?
I'm not bad. Are we deliberately leaning into really bad English accents like, right away?
We're leaning into it.
All right, mate, how's it going?
What, mate, how's it going? Shine your shoes.
Yeah, all right, yeah. Let's talk about some video games.
Down the pub, shall we go? This is, of course, my first time hosting, and my intent is to just get as off track as possible, really mix it up so that way people remember. So first things first, Gary.
Yes.
We're both British.
We are. Where are you from?
So I was just going to ask you exactly that. So let's get this going. So I was born in Pakistan. But then I moved to England and I'm from East London. So I've always lived in Leytonstone.
Oh, bloody hell. You and I have a lot in common. When did you move to England?
Oh, man.
How old were you?
I was about 2 or 3. It must have been like real, real young.
You don't even remember Pakistan, I'm sure, right?
I remember it.
Oh, you do?
There's something about, because I went back a few times, but then there's something about, like, I've always thought about this. Like, I have very little memories of my early life here in England, but I have like vivid memories of my life in Pakistan. And I think it is because like the shock of the move, like just cemented those memories in my mind.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And then like, it's been, so I have some memories of it. And I remember like, because also like where we lived in Pakistan when I was growing up was, we were like basically bottom of the barrel of society. So like, we had a bad toilet situation. We had a bad electricity situation. We had a bad food situation. It's much better now, but it was like some of the things that people are used to these days. Like I've had to take many a dump in a field because that's all we've had. Like that was life for us. But like that kind of stuff sticks with you. Because then when you get to appreciate the good things that you have when you go on. So I think it's like...
Well, it's amazing to me that you mentioned Leytonstone because I grew up not far from there. I was born in... I'm a proper Cockney. I'm also from East London. I was born in Bethnal Green.
Oh, hell yeah.
But you wouldn't know I'm a proper Cockney because I've lived now in America for longer than I lived in the UK. And so my accents, kind of been very diluted by the American experience. You know, accents are product of your environment. And if you live somewhere for long enough, it's going to affect the way that you talk and your phrasing and everything. But I was born in Bethnal Green. And then I lived in Hackney briefly. And then I moved out. My parents moved out to a place called Chingford. I lived around Chingford and Walthamstow for many years. And Leytonstone, as you know, is very much in that neighborhood, in that area. So yeah, you and I are actually from the same part of London.
Same neck of the woods. So yeah,
who knew we did this much in common?
Who knew? Yeah, like Bethnal Green, a couple of stops on the Central Line for me, like past it all the time. Queen Mary University is there. And I used to go there on the regular to meet one of my mates, a few of my mates who used to go to Queen Mary there. And also one of the best like curry restaurants around in London is there. It's called Tayyab's. It's nearby around that area. And it's incredible. I used to also work. I worked in a Primark in Chingford for a real long time.
Oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, it was the Chingford one. And I also worked in a Romford one. And that was like...
It's so funny. I knew you were British as well, but I never would have imagined that we were from the same like corner. such a small radius. That's much closer than I would have imagined.
Me, you, Jonathan Ross, and Alfred Hitchcock. Those are locals.
And David Beckham.
David Beckham, yeah. He went to Leytonstone School. So
yeah, he grew up just down the street from me.
Oh, wow. That's wild.
And, we both ended up doing roughly about as well for ourselves.
Exactly,
so,
exactly the same.
It's a constant battle between me and Beckham. Like every now and again, over the years he's tweeted me, married a Spice Girl, just scored a goal at the World Cup. And I'm like, yeah, well, fuck you. I'm on Kind of Funny Games Daily. And so, it's a constant battle for supremacy between me and Beck.
It's the classic Witter Beckham rivalry. It's been going on for decades.
Oh, yeah. On and on it goes. I'm still confident I'm going to come out on top.
I think so. And when the inevitable movie is made about it, it will end with you like standing on like a throne almost, and Beckham.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's, if you think about it, like, in the game of life, it's only like half time. He's probably 4 or 5 nil ahead at half time, but there's a lot of time for me to come back in the second half. Don't worry about it. I'm going to end up winning on penalties at the last minute.
You had Beckham living down the road. Mine was Jonathan Ross. So like Jonathan Ross is, so people who don't know Jonathan Ross, he's like a chat show host. He used to host Film, the TV show, right?
It was Film, whatever the year was. So like Film 85, Film 86. It used to be hosted by a guy called Barry Norman. I don't know if you're old enough to remember Barry Norman.
I don't.
And then when Barry Norman got too old to keep doing it, Jonathan Ross came in and took over. That's right.
Yeah. So he used to go to, so Beckham went to Leytonstone School, and I went to Norlington School for Boys. Which was where he went, Jonathan Ross, and his mum used to live like across the road from me. And my one run-in with Jonathan Ross was when I used to work at Game in the Stratford, not Stratford, in the White City, Westfield, which is a fairly new thing. But he came in and he was looking for a game. He was with his kid, and he was about to buy some absolute dog shit games, like just because his kid had been picked him up. And it was the same time that Batman Arkham Asylum had come out. And I was like, Jonathan Ross, let me recommend you a game. You don't want to buy any of this stuff. You need to buy Batman Arkham Asylum. Because knowing that he's a massive comic book fan, he's like a Doctor Strange fan, and he knows all that stuff. And he looked at me as if like, this nerd's trying to upsell me on a fucking brand new video game. And I was like, no, trust me. Trust me. I know you like comic books. This is what you wanted. And he was not having it. And he was like, listen. I went to the same school as you, and that's what sold him. He was like, I like this guy now. I like this guy. So I was like, okay.
I had my own run in. So I met Jonathan Ross once or twice because, you know, he is genuinely a big video game fan, really seriously into it. He's not one of these posers like, oh yeah, video games, but then can't tell you the name of any video games. He's really into it. And I was editing, you know, video game magazines back in the UK around the time that, you know, he's still on television, but, you know, he was on television back then as well. I had a couple of run-ins with him over the years and like kind of had like a passing, like, you know, first name thing with him. 1993, Jurassic Park premiere, like the press preview screening in Leicester Square. I got a ticket. We went. A couple of other journalists from whatever magazine I was on at the time. And we got there a little bit late and it was a really, really, really long line. I was like, oh, fuck, like we're going to get like really bad seats all the way at the back for this. But I saw Jonathan Ross was in the line and he was like right near the front because he's Jonathan Ross. I thought, let me try something here. I was like, this is either going to go down very badly or not because he might not remember me. But I walked over and went, John, how are you? And it's like, he looked at me for a second. I'm like, he doesn't remember me. He went, Gary. I was like, yes, how's it going? He's like, oh, we got to go all the way back of the line. He went, oh, never mind about that. Here, cut in here with us. And he got us into the front of the line. So that's I still amazing. Owe Jonathan Ross for that. Yo, well played.
What magazines did you edit, just out of interest?
So I started on a magazine back in 1988. I started on Commodore User, reviewing Commodore 64 and Commodore Amiga games. It was right at the time that 8-bit was kind of giving way to 16-bit. The Commodore 64 was kind of near the end of its life, and the Commodore Amiga had just come in. So it was right at that time.
Right.
So I did that for a couple of years, and I worked on the launch of a magazine called The One for 16-bit Games, which was part Amiga, part Atari ST, and part PC. And over time, as the Atari ST kind of fell away and the Amiga kind of won that battle, it became just The One for Amiga Games. CVG, Computer Video Games, worked on that for some years. Right. Ace, Advanced Computer Entertainment, worked on that. And then I went off and launched PC Gamer here in the UK. And then when they did the US version, that's what brought me over here.
So my first job in video games was for CVG. So I joined Future Publishing straight out of... So I went to uni, got a degree in law. And then there was some mad nonsense with my uni. Someone basically cheated on their exam, on their law exam. And they cheated by writing my name on their paper and then just absolutely biffing it. And then the uni got very confused by this very easily solvable mystery. And they withheld my degree for like a year. And in that time, I went and worked at Game. And then the thing that got me out of Game was getting hired at CVG. So I worked on CVG at Future. And like that was around the time. So the print mag was basically
when would that have been?
That was like 2004, 2005. Like, it was well after your time.
I was at Future like 93 to 96.
The mag was long gone by then. It was like the online part of it, and it was they were trying to rebuild it, and then we basically rebuilt it and made it a pretty big deal in the UK. And then I also worked on, like, I helped out with PC Gamer. I did loads of reviews for them. And a few other, like, Official Xbox, Games Master, O&M, Official Nintendo Magazine. So I did.
I remember all of these.
Yeah, I did all the Future magazines before, like, bouncing out. Then I left and worked in around the Gamergate time, when that was kicking off. Hell. I need to step away from this, not because, like, I didn't want to engage it. I engaged the issue, but then I also realized there was a point where it wasn't about the issue anymore. It was just about, you know, this kind of cycle of hatred that people were kind of just focusing on. And I was like, I'm gonna go and remind myself that I have the capability to do a normal job, because this video game stuff could pack it in at any time, and it seems like it is right now. So I went and worked on the Underground for a year.
You do on the Underground?
So I was a CSA. So I worked at, like, gate staff, and then also platform staff. You know, the next train approaching, the platform.
You must have some stories from working on the Underground.
Mate, I have seen some shit. Trust me. I worked there. Like, I did shift work for like that year, and it was like 3 a.m. starts. I worked on Victoria Line South. So it was like Victoria era, Pimlico, Brixton, that kind of place.
That's what I used to ride to work every day. The Victoria Line, Walthamstow Central to King's Cross.
Yeah.
And then I would change and do one stop on the District or Circle Line to Farringdon, because that's where Computer and Video Games used to be, right off Farringdon Lane.
Right. By the time I got there, we were in Baker Street, so home of Sherlock Holmes, Marylebone Baker Street. Before we actually get into the show proper, I'll give you my one favorite memory from working on the Underground. I was standing on the other side of the gate, so where the kind of like the little boxes where people hang out when they're working there, and someone rode their bike down to the station. I think this was Pimlico, I believe, rode their bike down to the station, came up to the gate, and tapped their Oyster on the gate, and it didn't open. And I was like, I looked at the actual heads up display. It's got a number on it, and you memorize what that means. And it was like, oh, you don't have any money on it. And this person was absolutely furious at the fact that they couldn't get through. And they tapped it again. I was like, you don't have any money on it. You just need to top up and you're good. And he was like, no, I definitely have money on it. I was like, mate, it says on there, you don't have any money. He got so angry that he threw his bike at me, like over the turnstile. He threw his bike at me. Obviously, this man, like, lifting the bike took him a few seconds, so I saw it coming, so I just, like, stepped back into the little booth and closed it, and it just landed on the floor, and I came out, and I was like, now you don't have your bike, and you can't get through. And this guy just turned around and left his bike on the floor, and I was like, cool, free bike.
Bloody hell. Well, Tam, I never knew that you and I had so much in common, from very much the same part of the world, and although slightly different eras, transited through a lot of the same magazines and companies and stuff like that. I had no idea.
Yeah, mate. They were living parallel lives.
Brilliant. Brilliant. And here we are now. Look at this. The parallel lines have intertwined, and we're hosting Kind of Funny Games Daily together.
We are indeed. And today's stories, they will include, we've got three major ones, but then we've got a couple of less, it's a slow news day, all right? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what we said before the show. Let's just, like, we'll just muck about a bit, because there's not too much going on in the news. When Jared and I used to host the show and there was not much news going on, we would just fuck about. And those was a lot of people's favorite shows, certainly among my favorites.
We've got a couple that are decent, though. We got a new look at a couple of DC games that are on the way. We've got Naughty Dog talking about their future in a not entirely unsurprising way. And then Metal Gear Solid 5 Ground Zeroes being taken offline, and then we've got a couple in between. And of course, you are watching Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We recap the news, and if you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong, which I imagine will happen frequently, by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or listen later on the podcast services that you subscribe to by searching for Kind of Funny Games Daily. If you want to be part of the show, which is a rare treat, You can head to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free, along with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping. So tomorrow, Wednesday, September 1st, Kind of Funny, and many people across Twitch, including myself, are taking part in a day off Twitch. This is to protest the lack of action from Twitch to prevent hate raids towards marginalized creators on the platform. It's been happening with an alarming frequency, and each and every instance of it is absolutely unacceptable. So we're getting together to show why it matters by stepping away from Twitch, by not streaming or not watching. However, if you are inclined to watch and you are inclined to stream, that's your business. Don't hate on people who are. Just make sure you share the campaign and do your part that way. This Thursday, Surgeon Simulator 2 is finally here, and Snow Bike Mike, aka Snow Bicycle Mike, is going to play it on launch day. The catch, written here with a question mark, is Kevin is going to use an IRL robotic arm to mess with Mike while Tim and Joey hang out. This sounds like a mess, and I can't wait. That's Thursday at 11 p.m. on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, and then the VOD will go up on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. This Thursday, you're also getting a new episode of The Blessing Show. That's going to go live at 7 a.m. PT with a YouTube premiere on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. And if you're watching this live after this, Mike and Barrett are going to finish their first ever playthrough of Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. And then, of course, up later on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. Quick thank you to our Patreon producer, Black Jack. Shout out to you, Blackjack. And today we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, but you'll get to hear a little more about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and will forever be the Roper Report. It's time for some bloody news. We've got 5 flipping stories today.
Up again!
God, blimey!
How many English cliches can we fit
in? How many can I cram in there? First story comes from Eddie McCooch at GameSpot.com. You might find a few GameSpot stories in here. Why? Because I'm biased. I'm the managing over at GameSpot. I'm running this shit. I'm going to pimp my wares. Gotham Knights, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League, and Fortnite Batman crossover news are coming to DC Fandom. October's DC Fandom event will feature the video games Gotham Knight and Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League, along with the next Batman crossover in Fortnite. It remains to be seen how much of Gotham Knights or Kill the Justice League we'll see, but fans will be eager for anything that Warner Bros. Elects to show off or discuss. We are. The Warner Bros. Games account posted a teaser for Gotham Knights. Always watching, always listening, the tweet says. And it shows a mysterious person wearing a mask and a suit. So, Gotham Knights was expected to launch in 2021, but got pushed 2020. Kill the Justice League is Rocksteady's game, was announced at DC Fandom in 2020, and we've seen little to nothing of it. So, I want to go back to this actual teaser image. We've got Gary here, who knows comics and knows.
Yeah, I saw this earlier today.
Mm-hmm. And we got Barrett here, who knows his Batman inside out, and I'm also a Batman fan. Any guesses to who this is? Is it a relevant character? We see the Court of Owls mask on it. What are we thinking about this?
Barrett?
It's hard to say. Just because, you know, they look like bald, generic thug almost from the back, right? Wearing, of course, the Court of Owls mask that we have seen in the teasers of Gotham Knights. If you don't know, Court of Owls originated in the Batman New 52 run with Scott Snyder at the helm. Who has, I think, helped with some of the aspects of this game, since they wanted to bring in the Court of Owls, they wanted to kind of work with the creator of them to kind of help put them into this universe that WB Montreal is creating. I could see this being just like a generic thug. I've always talked about, even before Gotham Knights was revealed, of if they ever do the Court of Owls, I think it would be a fascinating way to do the... kind of similar to Assassin's Creed Odyssey, where you have the Cult of Cosmos and you have to like go find clues throughout the world to like uncover each member and like go kill them. And I think that would be like a really cool system to have for the Court of Owls. Of course, you wouldn't be killing anybody as the legacy of Batman playing as like Batgirl and Robin and all that stuff. But like going around finding clues to uncover each identity of like each like lieutenant or whatever you want to call them for the Court of Owls, and like finding and capturing them so that this could be like one of those people. But that's just like, that's very much something that I would want. I don't know if they'll actually do like a system like that. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's just more of like a fun tease of like, yeah, the Court of Owls, they can be anybody. And here's this generic man to showcase that even more.
Yeah. Gary, how are you feeling about Batman, Gotham Knights, and also the Suicide Squad game?
Yeah, I feel good about it. Especially the Rocksteady one, you know, because we all know how good they are, right, when they're let loose in the DC universe. And Suicide Squad is cool again, right, because the James Gunn movie has you know, done great things for them. I think, you know, there's a lot of appetite for Suicide Squad right now. Rocksteady is a terrific, terrific developer. You know, there was a lot of speculation. We all wanted to believe that they were going to do a Superman game, right? That felt like the next logical step for Rocksteady after doing several, Batman games, but this could be just as good. I think it could be a lot of fun. I'm excited about it. I'm excited about Gotham Knights. I've been kind of in a DC mood lately, reading a lot of DC comics and just enjoying that in that universe a lot. I kind of feel like after the rough start they had with the movies, they're starting to kind of find their feet a little bit now with the movies, and just generally I feel like the DC universe is kind of is ticking upwards. Does that make sense? And these games are kind of a part of that. So I'm excited for the fandom stuff.
I've been this is my favorite run, but I've been dipping into and out of like reading the Grant Morrison run of Batman recently. Have you read that start to finish?
No.
You should try and do it. It is a bit of an elaborate ask, because Morrison, he wrote for DC for a really long time, but he's like most writers, like return writers, he dipped in and out through eras. So he'd write for like an arc and then go away and then come back a couple of years later. But every time he's gone away and come back, he's always connected his last arc to his current arc. And over the course of multiple years has created this extremely long, kind of ridiculous arc of for Batman. And it kind of, he's also looked into weaving into their events, so he works in the fact that at one time Bruce Wayne is missing and Dick Grayson becomes Batman and Damian Wayne becomes, and he like works off that as well. And it's a really fascinating arc that goes like really ridiculous places. But the only tricky thing is, because of the way he wrote it and his involvement in it, it's like sometimes you'll have to find one obscure issue from the like 1990s that has a really big impact. But thankfully, due to Comixology and other kind of like digital services, it's a little more feasible to do it. I'd highly recommend reading that arc, because it is absurd and ridiculous, and it involves some of the most. At one point, like he led into the Batman Incorporated thing, where Batman franchises Batman.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah,
yeah. So he was kind of like the maestro behind that. But my one of the questions I want to ask was, what was it like back when you were here for comic book stores? Because for as long as I've remembered, like being a kid, I've always loved comic books, but like the comic book store situation here has been abysmal in my time. What was it like for you getting comic books here?
Here in the, like, you mean since I came to the US?
When you were in the UK, like, was it?
Oh, in the UK, I never grew up reading like Marvel or DC comics. I didn't grow up reading Batman or Spider-Man. I was aware of them. I watched, you know, the Batman TV show, you know, the Adam West TV show. And I watched, you know, the classic Spider-Man animated show. And I think I was more of a DC kid. I was never really that into the X-Men or you know, the Marvels. Now, you know, these days now I don't, you know, discriminate, and I just like, you know, wherever the good stories are. I'm not like I would not consider myself like a DC person or a Marvel person. I think they're all great, and I enjoy, you know, all of this. Wherever the good stories come from, who cares? Yeah. But when I was a kid, and I'm going to throw out a bunch of really stupid British names that people in the chat are going to insist that I've made up.
Let me guess.
You'll know them. So I'll tell you some of the ones that I grew up on, and you can tell me how many of these you remember.
All right, go
the
on.
Beano.
Yep, 100%.
The Dandy.
Yep, 100%.
Whizzer and Chips.
Yes, I remember that one.
You remember Whizzer and Chips?
I think so. I never read that one, but I remember it.
Those are the three that I grew up, you know, I grew up reading kind of Dennis the Menace and the Bash Street Kids and Billy Whiz and stuff like that. Desperate Dan and General Jumbo. Roger the Dodger. Remember Roger the Dodger?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, brilliant. So those are the comic books that I grew up with. Lord Snooty. I loved the Bash Street Kids. They were always my favorite when I was a kid. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older that I started taking an interest in, you know, what we think of as comic books now, you know, superhero type comic books. But I grew up on, you know, British comic books, and most Americans won't understand, because there's no, as I'm aware, there's no American equivalent of like comics like the Beano or Dandy or your Wizarding Chips and books like that, but just like fun stories about kids, you know, and often, you know, they had like a special power or something that made them interesting. Like Billy Whiz could run really fast. General Jumbo had like a little miniature army that he controlled with like a, he had like a mad dad inventor, granddad inventor, who created this this miniature army of little kind of, you know, army men that he could control with like a control panel on his wrist. And it was generally, you know, there was like, oh, this normal boy has, you know, incredible powers. The one crossover I can remember, I can't remember which comic book, which British comic it came out of, but it became very popular and it was a more traditional superhero and it was very British. Do you remember Banana Man?
Yes, I 100% remember Banana Man. I was just going to mention Banana Man, but Banana Man was a real weird concept. Even now I watch like videos of it on YouTube and I'm like, this is bizarre even now. Like,
yeah, he was a little kid, and when it was kind of like Shazam, right? Because it was a little kid who turned into a big buff superhero, and whenever he ate a banana, he turned into Banana Man.
Potassium. You got to love it.
Yeah, it's all that potassium.
All right, before we move on to the next story, I just want to mention Darth Poopsie in the chat said Grant Morrison uses singular they pronouns. My apologies for that. But yeah, moving on to the next story. Naughty Dog teases the future. Single player experiences are near and dear to us. This comes from Eddie at GameSpot.com. We are all GameSpot here. Pimping my wares again. Naughty Dog is currently making its first ever standalone multiplayer game, but what other projects might the studio make in the future? We don't know for sure yet, but Naughty Dog co-president Evan Wells said fans can look forward to the studio making new IP and also working on established franchises. I think the easy answer is both. I think there's excitement to develop new IP, but there is still tons of love for Uncharted and The Last of Us, and I think you'll see both kinds of projects from us in the future, Wells said in an interview with Game Informer. Naughty Dog's known for its big cinematic single-player story-focused games, and you can expect this to continue in the future. Single-player experiences are near and dear to us. It's what has attracted a lot of people to Naughty Dog, and it's what inspires them. So I think we're going to keep it as long as we can, well said. Naughty Dog's Neil Druckmann is also quoted as saying in the interview, studio owner Sony has never come to them with a mandate to make a certain type of game. There has never been a mandate like, oh, this is where we see the wind shifting. Can you start making these kinds of games instead? We know just as they know that when you work on something you're excited by, something you're passionate by, you're going to do great work, he said. So is that any surprise to you? And do you kind of feel like what do you want the future of Naughty Dog to be? Because in my mind, the thing that I think about is they say that they don't want the business considerations to kind of implement or impact the way they make games. But more and more, we see games like, you know, games as a service type experiences becoming the way to create a game. And also in terms of business sense, the most feasible way to get a return on investment. As someone who's got experience working behind the scenes, like, what's it like? What does the future of a narrative-driven single-player game look to you? And do you think that kind of approach to it is sustainable?
First of all, I had a bit of a scare this morning when I looked at the show notes that you sent me, because that quote when, was it Druckmann who said, single-player experiences are near and dear to us? Mm. That was the headline of the piece. And because I was still waking up, when I first scanned it, I didn't read it right. And I read it as, Naughty Dog single player experiences are nearly dead to us. I'm like, oh,
God damn.
And then I read it again. I was like, okay, phew, a crisis averted. No, it's, listen, I don't think so. Even as, you know, games as a service and, you know, I'm having a ton of fun playing Aliens Fireteam Elite right now, which is a 3-player game, and playing a lot of multiplayer games. And they're definitely, you know, especially after this year or 2 years now, as we're getting close to of the pandemic, you know, we've seen this huge uptick in multiplayer gaming, right? Because people are using games as a medium to connect, whether it's Fortnite, whether it's Among Us, whether it's, you know, Call of Duty, PUBG, anything, right? We're all connecting through these games. And so multiplayer gaming is becoming bigger than ever, and arguably eating up, you know, a bigger and bigger share of the pie, you know, a single player experience, a campaign. Like when you think about like the Call of Duty campaigns, I mean, they sometimes they don't even bother doing them anymore, but you blast through the campaign in 6 hours, you have a lot of fun doing it, but then it's done, right? You never probably never go back and play it again. And then the real, you know, experience of the game is the hours and hours and hours and hours and that you put in, you know, playing multiplayer over the course of the next year until the next one comes out. But there will, I don't think it's an either or proposition. I think even as multiplayer games become more popular, there will always be a place and there will always be an appetite for really good, solid, story driven single player experiences. And that's good news for people like me who, you know, love story and always feel like I'm happy when there's some kind of narrative context for what I'm doing, and strongly believes that games can be as fertile a medium for really great storytelling as books or television or film or comics or anything else. And Naughty Dog and Insomniac and, you know, the great story, you know, driven developers that are out there continue to prove that. So I think even as Naughty Dog now experiments with multiplayer gaming, I don't think they're saying, is this going to be that our new direction is just going to replace, and then they clearly are saying it. They're not saying this is going to replace that. I think they're trying to figure out if they can also do good work in the multiplayer space as well. But I think, you know, for companies like Insomniac, Naughty Dog, my two favorite game experiences of the past 12 months, one of which I got to late, but I played Ratchet and Clank Rift Apart and Miles Morales back to back, and just had the best time with both of those stories, and was really reminded of just what a great time you can have with a really, really good narrative, immersive, single player, cinematic, you know, story experience. So I don't think they're going anywhere. I think there's plenty of room for both.
Yeah, I think you're right. The interesting thing for me is, like, it's weird how the kind of the situation or the balance has flipped, where it used to be that, you know, most of the games were these kind of games, right? Like narrative driven single player experiences. And the multiplayer games that were doing something strange or different were few and far in between, and they stood out because of it. You know, you had a game like, you know, a Counter-Strike or a Unreal Tournament, Quake came along, and it was like a big deal because it was a multiplayer thing, and it was like, oh, this isn't just trying to tell a story. It's just about playing with people. And now it's the other way around, where everything has got some sort of online component, and you're drowning in mechanics that when a single player narrative driven game comes out and it's like putting that first and foremost front and center, it stands out more than anything. But it does, in terms of business sense, it might not be the most fruitful on paper, but it does make sense for Sony to really fixate and emphasize on them, because there's few other studios doing them as well as they are. And they are kind of presenting something unique by virtue of literally everything else following a trend, right?
Yeah, and then the other thing I like about single-player games is that I feel like I can curate and control the experience more. Literally, just last night, me and a couple of friends were talking about jumping into Apex Legends, which I've never played, but a couple of friends want to play it. They were trying to get me to play it as well. I'm open to the idea of playing it. I like Battle Royales. I like Respawn. I think Apex Legends seems like a really good game. I'm just worried that coming into it late, I'm just going to get my ass kicked by more experienced players. One of the things that I think that games still don't do brilliantly well is matchmake players of the same level. I've played a bunch of multiplayer games recently where I constantly seem to get matched against players who are, like, you can see the number, like their rank is way higher than mine. Like, why are you not matching me with other newbies who are just playing the game for like the first time this week? Like, at least give me a chance. And so when you go into a multiplayer arena, you know, there are people in that arena who are going to eat you alive, and there's very little I can do to mitigate or control that. At least in a single player game, baby ass baby mode is right there. Easy mode, very easy mode. I like that I can adjust the experience, tailor it to a level where I feel like it's just challenging enough that I feel like I'm having fun with it. I'm being challenged, but I'm not frustrated. Right. I feel like I can find, you know, I can fine tune a single player game to have a lot of fun with it. And until I feel like this is something my wife and I have both been bellyaching about it recently. Matchmaking needs to get better, to find, to put players with other, basically put everyone in the same pool where they're, you know, they're all of a rough skill level. But these days, I feel like this is another topic, but I feel like public matchmaking in online games has still got a long way to go based on my recent experience in terms of finding players of the same level and putting them together so they can have fun. Because it's no fun getting your ass kicked all the time. And it can be, I guess maybe it's fun, but I still think it's less fun to just be, you know, whapping around a bunch of noobs all day and going, I'm just going to kill you all day. I want a challenge. I want to play players at my level. There's nothing more fun than finding someone that's roughly your level and having like a really challenging, you know, hard fought, evenly matched game. And you can do that when you're playing with friends online and you know who you're playing with. But in the world of random public matchmaking, I feel like a lot of players were often still getting mismatched.
Yeah, I think it's a tricky balance for people to strike, because the games that are most popular and the games that people want to play in multiplayer are the ones where, you know, streamers come to it and professionals come to it. And that's when the skill-based matchmaking stuff starts to become a hot button issue for some reason. But it is what it is. And I do agree that I hope that we get to a place where skill-based matchmaking is a little more prevalent and is a little bit better. But moving on. So this was originally going to be a story, but I've reduced it to a PSA because I want to throw in a kind of an X Factor story into the mix. So PSA story: online services for Metal Gear Solid 5 The Phantom Pain on Xbox 360 and PS3 and Ground Zeroes on Xbox 360, PS3, Xbox One, and PS4 are going to be terminated on May 31st, 2022. If you are still playing those games, that is when it's all shutting down. So get ready. The thing I'm going to throw in here is, while we've actually been talking, the Dead Space stream has been happening. And out of that, we've had some new details coming about the game. So I'm just grabbing directly from Nibel on Twitter, Nibelian, who you can follow along with, and reading a few of the details that they've been tweeting out. Body damage is completely new. So they've overhauled the body damage stuff, and now you can remove flesh from the bone of your enemies. And that also serves as a health indicator. The way each weapon reacts to enemies has also
been... You know what they should call that? They should call that flay tracing.
Oh, yes.
You like that?
Yes, Gary. Yes. If anyone knows anything about me, I love a good pun. And that was a good pun, Gary. I like it.
I'll bring all the dad jokes all day long.
Bring it. I'm a huge fan of dad jokes. Some of the weapons in Dead Space are better at removing flesh, or as we now call it, flay tracing. They're good at flay tracing. Some are better than at dismembering body parts and so on. Each has a completely new damage model as well, and every part reacts to damage. The zero-G mechanic, which is what those games are pretty much known for most, I think, they're the most atmospheric parts of it, have been overhauled and allows for 360-degree freedom and thrusters, like in Dead Space 2, and they also added new paths and environments with new challenges. You can go to there's no microtransactions there, but you can go and check out that the archive of that wherever you watch your videos. But Gary, how are you feeling about Dead Space Remake? You excited for it?
You know, I'm excited for other people who are into Dead Space. I never really was. I'm not. I don't really play horror games. I've said it before. Fatal Frame 2 on the PlayStation 2. That was the last one I played. Noped out of it. Never went back to that genre. So it's not my cup of tea, because horror games, they're just too intense for me. I can't deal with them. But I know it's a very well-liked genre. And for people who are excited for it to come back, I'm happy for them.
Yeah, I mean, I remember playing this one the first time on my Xbox 360. And it was one of those ones where I love the horror genre, and especially horror games. And it was one of those games, a rare game, where I simply could not stop playing. And people say, oh, it's one of those games you can't stop playing. And it can mean a variety of things. I literally could not tear myself away from the screen. I was so immersed in it. And I was like, such a good game. So I'm so excited to see it come back. That second one was excellent too. And then they really, really dropped the ball with that franchise with that third one. It was a wacky, wacky game. But I'm glad to see it back. And I hope that it kind of leads to a renaissance in that franchise. There's not a lot of survival horror games on the AAA level outside of Resident Evil. And I don't know if there's a
genre. Did you play Alien Isolation? Did you like that one?
I did play Alien Isolation. I liked it, but I also was frustrated by it a lot. There's something weird that happened to me where it's like the AI for the Xenomorph was so good. My expectation became it needs to be perfect. So when it faltered, I felt a ways about it. I had a situation where it was bugging in a way that the Xenomorph would enter a room and then just not leave the room and would just like stand around. And I was like trapped in a locker or something like that. Huh. And that happened to me a few too many times. And in a normal game, I think I would be fine with just reloading it. But on a game that's predicated on this is the most advanced AI we've given this Xenomorph ever, it really like soured me to it. So I played it and really enjoyed how much effort they put into it and how much kind of like they clearly love that franchise and the iconography of it, and kind of like the language of that franchise, and they put so much effort into it. But the actual playing experience of it was not great for me.
Okay.
Yeah, but I really want to see more of these kind of like survival horror games come back. They're few and far in between on this scale. And obviously, like, who knows why? Like, Resident Evil seems to be the only one that's really doing it. We almost had a Silent Hill, but we all know how that went. Is there any other genre that you think is in dire need of a revival? It's a very broad question, but
I feel like horror games are actually very well served. Horror gamers, I think, are very well served these days, especially over on PC.
Yeah.
When there are so many options in the horror survival space, like just all out, you know, horror. And then you look at kind of the Dark Pictures stuff that's happening right now, and Evil Within. Horror to me right now does not seem like an underserved genre. And it's hard for me to say because I don't play them. I'm an outsider looking in. So a horror, someone who's into horror games like you could probably speak more authoritatively about like how satisfied, you know, you currently are with games in the horror space. But when I just go like look, you know, what's on the shelves and see what's out there or what's coming out, it doesn't seem like the horror genre is being neglected by game makers at the moment.
Yeah. There's an interesting distinction to be made. Like, the horror genre is definitely being served really well, but they're not, the interesting things aren't usually happening in the AAA space. They're happening in the indie space. If you're into the indie horror games, you're getting some of the coolest ideas around, or have been in many, many years. Like Red Candle Games, they did Detention,
right?
And I forgot the name of Devotion. Those two games are absolutely superb. Devotion kit was released, I think it was this year, after being pulled after some political controversy around China, and that is a standout game for me. But
this is why I say on PC in particular that when I go on Steam, there's so much horror.
Yeah. There's a lot of horror. The problem with the stuff on Steam is like there's a lot of horror. The indie games do stuff really interesting well, but it's also buried in a lot of like really shitty janky horror that is like the remnants of the Five Nights at Freddy's era of like, let's just pump out some scary looking stuff.
What do you think is the all out scariest horror game?
Oh, I don't know. There's something, I think for me, what scared me the most is kind of like a moment in time. So I remember playing Silent Hill on a PlayStation 1 back in the day, and the reason it was scary was also the reason it was partly propelled by its technical limitations, like the fog, the music, the kind of the grunginess to the aesthetics that were just a product of it being on a not very powerful machine, the PlayStation. It was powerful at the time.
Yeah, I remember feeling that same way about, remember Manhunt?
Yeah,
had that
exactly.
Really gritty, grimy, kind of shitty look to it. It was deliberate, but the shitty nature of those kind of, you know, PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2 graphics, I think you're right. Like, it actually kind of helped. That lo-fi look actually was a bonus for some horror games of that era.
Exactly. And now these days, it's more about the atmosphere as opposed to like, I feel tense more than I feel horrified or scared. I feel like the last time I felt scared was like Silent Hill, PS2, you know, PS1 era, that kind of stuff. So
did you ever get to a point where like you're playing a horror game like late at night or whatever, or by yourself, and you're like, you know what, I gotta stop because it's too scary? Like, have you ever like noped out of a horror game?
I've never noped out of a horror game. I don't think I've ever noped out of a horror game. I remember the closest I came, and it wasn't really noping. It wasn't because I was scared. It was because I felt overwhelmed. It was crap. What's the follow up to the Penumbra games? It's gonna frustrate me now. It's a well known PC horror game. It's the one where there's an enemy and it's invisible and you are Amnesia. That's the one. Amnesia.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Yeah.
I've never played it, but I've watched a lot of the Twitch stream clips of it where people are just like losing their shit.
So there's an area where it's like partially flooded. And the enemy is invisible.
No. Damn,
and
I can't.
Yeah, and
I have the worst flashbacks right now with like my friends and I playing that, like taking turns on that section on PC. Holy
and
shit!
It takes a little while. It takes just long enough for you to realize what happened, is happening, for it to scare the shit out of you. And like, what is happening is by stepping in the water, the movement that you're putting into the water, the waves you're creating, is alerting this invisible enemy to where you are. Otherwise, it can't tell where you are. And then all you see is the heavy footsteps of this unseen monster displacing water as it comes towards you. And you've just walked through this door and you're like, what's happening? What's happening? What's happening? And that's where I like hit escape. And I was like, well, I don't know what's going on. And I was like freaking out. So I like, it took me a second to like regroup and then get back into like, this is just a game. You know how to figure this out. There's a bookcase on the floor in the water. Just jump on top of it. But
can you do VR horror? Because I know that's a red line for a lot of people. It certainly is for me.
I can do VR horror. And I don't know many games that I just got an Oculus Quest 2, the latest one of the non-wired one. So I've been meaning to dig into that, and I do want to play them. I did play Resident Evil in VR, and it was good.
Fuck
it wasn't
me. You're a braver scary. Man than me. I can't do it.
The Resident Evil was okay. The kitchen demo that they previewed Resident Evil with was considerably scarier because it used it in a really interesting way.
I'll tell you a story about that. Years ago, at San Diego Comic-Con, I got invited. It was me and Major Nelson, really, weirdly. I don't know why it was the two of us, but we got invited to playtest PSVR before it was public. It was like a behind-the-scenes demo. And they took us back there, and they showed us a bunch of stuff that was fun. There was like an asymmetrical game. It was like one person versus like four others that was really fun. I don't remember what that was. We did like the London heist getaway thing, if you remember that. And then the last one, they said, okay, for this last one, we're not going to tell you anything about it. Like previously they said, this one's like a heist game. This one's just like fun puzzle game. They said, this last one, we're not going to tell you anything about it. And I said, well, tell me, you got to give me something. They said, no, it's better if you don't know what it's going to be. And I'm like, you know, I can kind of know where this is going. And I know what my own limitations are. And all they said was it's called The Kitchen. And I was like, okay, I need to know what it is, because VR, like I'm one of those people that can have a really visceral reaction to VR when it's really effective. And horror in particular, it can be too much. So I said, just tell me something. And they said, have you ever seen any Japanese horror? And I just fucking walked out. Like, I just left. That was the last thing that the guy said to me, and I just left. But yeah, no, fuck that. That's not for
me. That one is scary because it's like a very sore situation. You're just tied to a chair and you're in the kitchen and you can look around, and over time, like it takes a little while, it's a slow burn, but you see a figure start moving around in the background, like a distance. It's like creating shadows.
See, I don't even like hearing this from you right now. Even this alone is too scary.
The worst part of it was like the figure kind of maneuvers around you and then comes up from behind. So the first real indication that you have it's there is when you start to see its hands, like its fingers, enter your
peripheral vision. No. And it's gonna have all the stereoscopic surround sound, right? So you know when someone's behind you and all that shit.
I remember getting a preview of that at Capcom's headquarters, and they had to assign people a safe word to shout when it got too much. And I remember being outside and just hearing the safe word being shouted constantly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's my safe word was fuck off right before I left. Yeah.
Piss off. No. All right. So we were going to have one more story, but I think I'm going to skip it. It's not a particularly big one because we are running a bit behind. But before we do that, I just want to remind folks that you can subscribe to Patreon. Make sure you're heading over to Patreon and getting a subscription. That way you guarantee yourself an ad-free broadcast of Kind of Funny Games Daily. If you did not subscribe, and you aren't coughing up the cash for the good content, you're about to get an ad right in your face. Please enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Purple. I know it may seem like it, but the world isn't really against us from getting a good night's sleep. Luckily, you'll have no difficulties drifting off to sleep on a Purple mattress. That's because only Purple mattresses use their fancy grid technology. It's a unique ventilated design that lets air flow through to keep you cool. I can tell you this as a fact. I have the Purple pillow, and I will never use another pillow in my life. I love it so much. It never gets too hot. It's always cold. You don't need to flip it to the other side because it's just cold already. I don't know how it works. It's the grid. It's cool. The grid is also supported for your back and legs while cushioning your shoulders, neck, and hips. Unlike memory foam, which remembers everything, the grid bounces back as you move and shift. Purple is comfort reinvented. Right now, you'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. Go to purple.com/games10 and use promo code games10. That's purple.com/games10, promo code games10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. purple.com/games10, promo code games10. Terms apply.
So the final story was going to be about Halo Infinite, but Halo Infinite's a ways away. We don't have to worry about. But if I wanted to know what's coming soon to Mama Grub Shops today, where would I look, Gary?
I'm sure, by the way, that we'll get all to the Halo, get to all the Halo Infinite news on the X-Cast this Friday.
Yep.
With me, Snowbike Mike, and I think Paris is back. The official list of upcoming software on each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts, each and every weekday.
Hell to the year. So we have Lamentum, which is coming to PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC. We've got Prinny Presents, NIS Classics, Volume 1, Switch on PC, Kiwi, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, S, all of that business. The Song of Iron, which sounds like a shelved Game of Thrones spinoff. Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PC. Rustler, which is either a brand, or like an off-brand of like hamburger or a softcore porn mag. We'll figure that one out. PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, Switch, PC. Guts and Goals, not Goals and Girls, sadly, but that is on everything. Monster Harvest, PS4, Xbox One, Switch, PC. The Big Con, you can read a review for that at GameSpot.com right now. Seems all right. That's coming to Xbox Series X, S, Xbox One, PC. Slid the Snail, which sounds like one of Gary's old British comics, honestly.
We had a debate of if it's Slid or Clid on PS5.
I don't want to say Clid. I mean, I've said Clid now, but... PS5, PS4, PC, Beyond Mankind, The Awakening, which I'm sure, I don't know if that game is good, but you've given it the most generic name title there. Apologies to developers if you're watching.
I feel like you could do a character called Clid the Tortoise, just if you really want to fly close to the sun.
Yes, that is, oh, Gary, I wish you hadn't said that.
You started it.
Fair play. Crash Auto Drive. I feel like that is like the consequence of auto driving are in the title. You crash. Switch. Vilset, PC. Soul Nomad and The World Eaters, PC. Those are what's out today. New dates. This is where ordinarily we talk about new release dates or changes in release dates, but there's nothing going on. So what I thought I'd do is real quickly just give you an overview of September. Real quickly. Is anyone else doing that on Kind of Funny Games Daily? No, this is innovative. September 1st, El Shaddai. September 2nd, Bravely Default. September 7th, Sonic Colors Ultimate. September 10th, Life is Strange. September 10th, also Tales of Arise. Also September 10th, Pact. WarioWare, get it together.
The most important game on September 10th.
WarioWare, that's the big one.
That is the one. It's gonna bring joy to our withered, sad little hearts. September 14th, Deathloop. I have been playing that, I'm allowed to say, and what I will say is there's a preview up, and so far it's very good. September 16th, Skatebird.
I only have two days to be Deathloop, so I can have time for Skatebird.
I remember Skatebird from that Kind of Funny showcase. It feels like forever ago. I'm glad it's finally coming out.
It looks really fun. September 21st, Kena, Bridge of Spirits. September 22nd, Test Drive Unlimited is back. But you forgot about Test Drive Unlimited.
Test Drive is still going?
There's a new one coming
out. I remember I bought and played the original Test Drive back in the day. Awesome.
It was really, really weird. They tried something and they didn't nail it. September 23rd, Diablo 2 Resurrected, if you're into that Diablo business. September 23rd also, Sable. Death Stranding Director's Cut, September 24th. Lost Judgment, September 24th. And then New World, September 28th. Outer Wilds DLC coming September 28th. I finished that game yesterday and I cannot wait. Hot Wheels Unleashed finally on September 30th.
What a way to end the month. Hot Wheels Unleashed, let's go.
I knew you were going to be hyped for that. That's why I put it in
Tim, have you seen the trailer for that? Tim and Witta, have you seen the trailer for this game? Because it looks insane.
It is surprisingly Hot Wheels Unleashed. So we got approached to do like an exclusive reveal of it on GameSpot. And I was like, Hot Wheels? And then I watched the video and I was like, Hot Wheels, all right, let's go.
Hold on, let me pull it up real quick.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up on my end too.
While you're pulling it up, I'll just do the deals of the day real quick. I just got one in there. Comes obviously from Wario64, who's just giving everyone a heads up that Xbox games with gold titles are up. And among them, you've got Warhammer Chaos Bane, which I've heard is quite fun. More importantly, Zone of the Enders HD Collection. This is, of course, coming from Konami, the Kojima team. A lot of Metal Gear is basically designed by Yoji Shinkawa. So if you're into that kind of stuff, check it out. And
Looking at the Hot Wheels Unleashed trailer right now. I've got two thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. One is... absolutely. I feel this has the potential to be a ton of fun. right? It looks like it could be really, really fun. And also, they have nailed the look of the die-cast metal on the cars. Yes. You know, that particular kind of reflective metallic sheen that they have? These really do look like the little toy Hot Wheels cars. They did a great job with that.
Yeah, I'm excited to play this. I think this is going to be like a sleeper hit for a lot of people.
Absolutely. When is this coming out?
The 30th. That's coming out on 30th of September.
Yep. Oh, shit. That's so, only a month away. I'm excited about that. I'll play it. My kid will probably like that as well. I'll play that with my kids.
Get your pre-orders in.
Get it all in. Right. That's, I guess that's, is that on all platforms, I'm guessing?
I believe so, yeah. I think they're going to.
And I'm going to be annoying. I'm going to do the thing that I do. Do we know if it's crossplay? Because I'm Mr. Crossplay.
You know what? Let me Google it right now for you. Hot Wheels Unleashed.
Because we are at a point now, if a game is not crossplay, you better have a good fucking reason why not.
It's unknown. It's unknown.
Unknown?
Unknown. We don't
fucking
know.
Fucking hell.
There's still time. Everyone go to Twitter.
There's still time.
The Hot Wheels account and tell him crossplay it up.
Crossplay it up.
Right, now it's time for the reader mail. You can write into patreon.com/kindoffunny where you can get your questions read on the show, just like Takibi, who says, after reading the comments from Neil and Evan from Naughty Dog, I have to say I was extremely disappointed, particularly their views on crunch and unionization. To me, their comments sounded very Activision Blizzard, corporate, without feeling and not really engaging with the question. This was surprising considering that Insomniac famously did not crunch at all for Ratchet and Clank. My question is this. As they are a part of the PlayStation Studios, do you think that they should take a top-down approach from PlayStation and adopt a more Insomniac approach and denounce crunch across the board, or should different studios still have control over studio policies? What do you think about that, Gary?
I think that all companies need to prioritize minimizing, mitigating crunch as much as possible. The physical and mental well-being of the people that work at these companies should always be a top priority. It does sound like, you know, there are some companies that are doing better than others. Insomniac, again, famously, you know, all their employees will come out again, yep, no crunch, we just made a great game without crunch. They, whatever the magic formula is over there, they seem to have cracked it. Naughty Dog, you know, again, they make great games, but there's always that little but at what cost, right, with some of this. And, you know, these days we live in a very socially aware time, rightly so, and so we don't just go, thank you very much for the game. I don't care like what it took to make it, you know. Just, I remember when my wife and I got engaged, my wife wanted to make sure that her ring didn't have a conflict diamond in it. And, you know, it's obviously not, it's not necessarily of the same scale, but I think it's in the same conversation. You don't want a video game that is like a conflict diamond. I feel like I'm overstating, but you know what I mean? Like, you don't want to know that people suffered so that you could have a nice thing, right?
Yeah, exactly. And there's enough examples of amazing games being made without crunch that it's kind of unacceptable now that a company that operates on such a scale as Sony is capable of doing, is still, like, you know, not enforcing the policy of no crunch on their teams, you know, because we all work in creative fields to one degree or another, and the best work comes from people who feel comfortable, relaxed, and like they're empowered to do good work instead of worrying about XYZ, their own health. It is wild that this continues to happen. And it might be like speaking out of turn, but at a certain point in a world where crunch is avoidable, having a studio that does crunch and acting like it's just a matter of fact is more example of mismanagement than anything to me. Like,
it's a solvable problem. You just need to have the will to solve it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes it involves spending more money, which is the hardest thing to convince a lot of companies to do, but it's the right thing to do.
Exactly. So that's how we feel about it. Kind of move on to you're wrong, because I obviously have screwed up a bunch of things. Firstly, I've got Kebab saying it's Snow Bicycle Michael. I don't like Snow Bicycle Michael. I know you all like it, but I like Snow Bicycle Michael. Because
I like Snow Bicycle Micycle.
Yeah, I also use Snow Bicycle Micycle sometimes, which is quite amusing to me. But I would like to pass a motion that we change it to Snow Bicycle Michael, because it's more amusing and it's like a little more quaint.
I like
whatever
the bicycle
way you
want
to come at it.
Sorry, Gary, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, I think they're all delightful. Everyone I think everyone should come at it from their own direction.
Yeah.
There doesn't have to be like one officially, approved one.
I just really like Bichel because I think that was coined by Blessing, and he was so the way he started that and was so confident in thinking that Bichel was like a word. It just I was like, yeah, I like that. Snow Bichel Michael.
Okay. I'll add it as an alternative then. How about that? That
works, I respect it. I respect it. Thank you.
We've got one from MFAM, my fam, who says, P.S. I Love You has a new video up on YouTube talking about Far Cry 6. Thank you. Kebabs also says, you forgot to do the jingle after the official.
Yeah,
list.
We just did Tam did a fuck yeah or whatever it was, and it was better.
Yeah.
Again, though, not every host has to be like Greg, right? You're supposed to bring your own vibe to the show. Do your own thing. Come up with your own gimmick. Be original.
And then we've got a couple saying, the new test drive is supposed to release in September 22nd, 2022. Not 2021. That's my bad.
All right.
You know, I'm sad to say to everyone that we'll have to go another year without.
Yeah, can we last another 12 months without a new test drive game?
I don't think so. We'll find out. Tomorrow's hosts are Blessing and Andy. And then on Thursday, you've got Janet and Tim. And then Friday, you've got Blessing and Tim again.
What a lineup.
That's a hell of a lineup. That is strong. If you're watching live on twitch.tv, as I mentioned at the top of the show, Mike and Barrett are going to be wrapping up their first ever playthrough of Metal Gear Solid 2 Sons of Liberty right here on twitch.tv for such kind of funny games. And then you'll be able to rewatch it on youtube.com/kindoffunnyplays. That's where you go and, you know, relive the amazing moments and chop it up with others in the comments, because it's going to be a hell of a time. That ending is wild. Thank you, Gary, for being there with me on my first ever attempt at hosting.
Thank you for being an excellent host. I think you did a great job, personally.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much. For now, we're going to head to the post show. Supporters at the silver membership or above on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames can get this. And until next time, goodbye.